Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Thursday, the 23rd of October, welcome, 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 welcome on in, friends, to the show. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. Today on the show, we got a fun one for you.
Yep.
We're going to talk about the Philly food scene with a couple of experts, folks who've eaten a lot of dishes at a lot of restaurants. Craig LeBan, food critic for The Inquirer. Margaret Eby, food editor at The Inquirer. We're talking to them because A, they know a lot about food.
They do.
And B, because they just came out with their annual list of what they call the most vital restaurants in the Philadelphia region. Not the best. It's not a competition.
Mm-mm.
But the most vital. It's 76 restaurants, as the name implies. And we're going to go through some really interesting ones on the list. And last year we did this show and had some awesome participation from the audience.
Yes, we did.
Because we asked folks what places you think should be on the list. And by the way, it doesn't have to be a sit-down restaurant. It could be a food cart. It could be a little hole-in-the-wall takeout place. And people pitched theirs. And Craig, I think, had heard of almost all of them and had some responses. That was a lot of fun. So we want to hear from you today. What restaurants do you think should make the list? Or just shout out your favorite, your sentimental
favorite.
Yeah,
this is your chance.
It's your chance. 888-477-9499 is the number. The email is studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, hello, drop a comment in the chat.
I look forward to hearing what our audience has to say. I also look forward to having Craig and Margaret in the studio. And I love the shows that we talk about food because you're the foodie. And I'm always not like... in the know, but now I'm about to be in the know, y'all.
We also want to know what song you would pick to end the show today, because it's DJ of the day. It's Thursday. We always go out Thursday with a song picked by one of you related to the theme of that day's show. So, boy, you go a lot of directions today.
Date night, a lot of things.
Restaurants, dining.
Yeah.
So send your suggestions to studio2@whyy.org by 12:30, and one of you will be our very lucky DJ of the day.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing the song too. I love Thursdays for that reason.
Food and music, great combo.
I know. Let's do it. Now we have our trio of news stories, and I'm kicking us off today. A New Jersey lawmaker is proposing legislation that would impose a surcharge on artificial intelligence data centers that use excessive electricity. Assemblywoman Andrea Katz, her office is in Mount Holly, New Jersey, says her bill would charge a fee to data centers that consume an excessive amount of energy during peak hours. The state would then use the money to help modernize the electrical grid instead of consumers having to foot the bill for those costs. Now, Katz says if data centers knew that they would have to pay a fee, they would work harder to be more efficient in the use of electricity. Now, we talked about AI data centers here on the show. They're hogging, you know, energy, and it's becoming a huge issue among consumers as they see rising electricity bills. And it's been happening over the past few years, and this year in particular. And by the way, it is an issue that is front and center in the New Jersey governor's race.
Oh, yeah.
So, of course, New Jersey lawmakers are stepping up.
Yeah, it's interesting this is happening in New Jersey now because it's such a live issue as we come up on a big governor's race in New Jersey. So that juxtaposition, of course, is important to note here. You know, like with any bill like this, of course, my questions and my skepticism go toward, does this address the problem, or is this the way to address the problem? We did a show on this topic recently, and the most recent spike in energy costs is a lot related to
future speculation.
Yeah, exactly. Local utilities bidding for future capacity with the regional grid operator. So the inputs there are coming from like 13 different states, and so it's like a big bid among all the different local utilities within this big region. And so if one state passes this type of bill for energy use once a data center is online, which is what this appears to be, how does that actually impact? Maybe it does in some way. That would be like my general question, of course, but it's no surprise –
Yeah.
That lawmakers are starting to take note of this because their constituents are starting to take note of it.
Yeah, and it at the very least, it looks like they're trying to do something, which I think most voters want to see. At least lawmakers trying. And by the way, this bill, according to Katz, will be formally introduced next month when lawmakers are back in session. But I'll note that that similar legislation was introduced in Virginia and it failed. So we don't know. She's hopeful that it'll work its way through the legislature, but we'll see.
All right. Story number two, Cherry.
Yes. Cheney University. Have some good news about Cheney. It's the nation's oldest historically black university. It has seen its biggest enrollment increase in a decade.
Wow.
Enrollment is up more than 37% over last year. That's according to Cheney. It takes the school enrollment up to about 851 students. This uptick is part of a 7-year trend where the school has seen at least an 11% increase every single year. And this is a pretty big deal. And it's tremendously wonderful news for the university, which just a few years ago faced significant financial and accreditation challenges. It was on the brink of closure. And
truly,
they had
truly,
some
right
really,
on the precipice.
Really rocky years. Yep. Even in 2023, the university's accreditation had been put on probation. They saw a dip in enrollment. So this is a pretty big deal for them. President Aaron Walton, who came on board at a low point for the university back in 2017, he says this is the result of strategic planning, enhanced student services, and it's raised confidence in the school.
And Cheney's part of the PASHE system.
Yes.
And the PASHE system overall, which encompasses many state universities across the state, doesn't include Penn State and Temple, by the way. Their overall enrollment actually ticked up a bit this year for the first time in a long, long time. So that Cheney is part of that story as well. I thought this was interesting, too, because another school that had really been struggling recently with enrollment and finances was LaSalle in North Philly. And they saw a big enrollment spike this year. And I'm just curious about why all of that might be. Could it be that some competitor schools have closed?
Yeah,
and there's some market
happened.
Share to be grabbed there. Could it be that these schools have been forced to really refocus on enrollment because of other challenges? Maybe there's a story to be told there about how a couple of these struggling schools have just recently seen big jumps. Of course, we know big challenges also lay ahead for higher ed because the number of students graduating high school is about to fall significantly over the next decade or so, if not longer.
Yeah, so at least we have some good news, at least for today.
At least for today. story number three. There is a booze battle brewing in the courts.
Oh, that's good. Booze battle. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that one. We saw this story first in Philadelphia Magazine. Local vodka brand Stateside is suing Anheuser-Busch for trademark infringement. Stateside has a very popular line of iced tea and vodka / iced tea and lemonade drinks called Surfside. Maybe you've seen them. Well, earlier this year, Anheuser-Busch released its own iced tea and vodka drink called Skimmers. And if you look at the can side by side, boy, do they look similar. They both have a beachy theme. They both have a throwback color gradient pattern in the lower third of the can and a glowing sun design incorporated into the logo. Some say imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, Cherry Gregg, but is this perhaps going a bit too far?
Well, come on, Anheuser-Busch. I mean, you are worth $121 billion.
And you got to rip off this little guy?
You've been around since the 1800s, okay? And you mean to tell me your branding and marketing team sucks so bad that this is the best you could come up with?
Okay? Come on now. Come on now.
Look at that color gradient.
Call yourself the king of beers
over
there. The
sun in the back. Even the font. Okay, former IP lawyer here, and the legal standard in a trademark infringement case is likelihood of confusion, and it doesn't take a law degree to see that Surfside has a case.
Oh, baby. Do you like their chances in court?
I do. I absolutely do.
All right.
It's
all
very
right.
confusing. I mean, you
but
know.
You know what? You got to the heart of it. Anheuser-Busch. Why do they feel the need to do this?
Obviously, they're onto something.
Obviously,
Surfside is onto something.
The iced tea and vodka drinks are really big, and Surfside pioneered this. Credit to them. It was named the fastest growing alcohol brand in America by Forbes earlier this year. So I know Anheuser-Busch is looking at them saying, I'd like to steal some of that market share. But can you be a little bit more creative about it at the very
least?
Use
at least some different colors,
Some
man.
Different colors?
Come on.
Some different themes? I mean, it's
Did you have to use the sun?
Did you have
use
to?
Use a moon.
Use a moon. There you go. We just did it for you in like off the top of our head in 15 seconds. Come on, guys.
Come on.
Come on. And we're not even in the advertising business, okay? We're not even that smart. We just did it in 15 seconds. She just did it right there. Well, maybe you're smarter than that. I didn't think of that.
Like, we threw the moon. We spitballing here.
We're just spitballing. Do the stars. Anything in the galaxy besides the sun.
Don't copy, man. Come on now.
We're going to keep the food conversation and the drink conversation rolling this hour.
Yeah, I'm excited about this show.
It's going to be great. Yeah. We're talking with Craig Leban and Margaret Eby from The Enquirer about the 76, which is this annual list of the 76 most vital restaurants in the region. And we want to hear the restaurants that are very vital to you. We got some comments coming in already. What restaurants do you love that you think should be on this list? Or maybe you're just a little overlooked. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2 at whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. Come on, Anheuser-Busch. Get it together.
Do better. Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman. Errant folks, it's time to talk food. Philly food. Last year, The Enquirer introduced an annual list called The 76, a guide to what they call the most vital restaurants in our region. It's not a ranking. It's not an order here, folks. It's not a competition. It's just a heck of a way to explore the incredible dining diversity all around us.
And when you're exploring, you need great guides who know the landscape. And we've got two of the best today, folks who helped put this list together. We have Margaret Eby, food editor for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Margaret, welcome back to Studio 2.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Yes, and we have the famous yet unseen Craig Leban, longtime food critic at the Inky. Craig, how are you?
I am so glad to be back here.
Yes.
We are glad to have you. We're also
and
glad.
Still unseen.
And still,
yes,
unseen.
Still unseen.
Still unseen. We can see you, though, which feels like a nice little delicious inside secret.
I know.
We don't have to share with the audience.
And it's because folks who are watching on YouTube, when you see Craig, you will see cheese.
Yeah, just a picture of cheese. And that's exactly what he looks like, by mm-hmm. the way. Just kidding. We want to hear from you this hour. What restaurants do you think should make this list? Or just shout out some of your favorite restaurants. We'd love to read them off this hour. Maybe even hear what Margaret and Craig think about them. So give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, do us a favor and drop your recommendations in the chat.
Yeah, so this list is both a celebration, it's a snapshot, and half the names are new. And so I just want to get like an understanding, Craig and Margaret. Like, so how did you put this list together this year? And like, how did you make the decision of who to let go and who to add? Craig, we'll start with you.
Well, let me say, this has been this is the second year we've done our 76.
You're good. You're on.
And it is an evolving process. Mm-hmm. But basically, we have a number of scouts from our newsroom, from the food team and beyond. In the newsroom, we had up to 18 different people going out into the community and actually doing eating and eating
18.
Live. Yeah, a lot
wow,
of people
that's a
were.
Lot of
this
people.
Was a big. Mm-hmm. This is a big team project, and they were divided up by what we would call beats. You know, somebody had to do Italian, somebody had to do Mediterranean, etc. And so we were looking at the feedback of these live meals and sort of deciding like which places were feeling really special at that moment. So it is a unique list in that the effort that went into producing it was really current and vital. And so, you know, when you look at 76 and 40 of them are different from
last year. Because this is the second year. Too. So we didn't know how much turnover there was going to be. Margaret, did it surprise you how much turnover there was? Or was that kind of baked into the idea of this list from the start?
I mean, I was surprised and delighted because I think Philly is such an incredible and expansive food scene. And our goal is always to cover more of it and to see more of it. And I think the turnover really reflects not only the shifting energy of the dining scene, all the new places that opened, but also pockets of Philadelphia that we really got to dig into that we didn't get to dig into last year. Mm-hmm. Different communities, different immigrant cuisines. And there's just a lot there that we wanted to highlight that felt really special and felt like anchor points for all the different people that the Inquirer covers and writes for.
Yeah. Sounds I like there it. Might have I been some it. Thumb wrestling going on.
Oh, yeah.
When y'all had to refine
Does
this
it get
list.
Legit oh, yeah. contentious?
I
Does
feel it like it was probably like,
ugh. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it gets
heated.
It gets really heated. I don't think there weren't any actual
no fights this year.
No arm wrestling.
But, you know, 76 sounds like a big number.
It's not.
But it's really not, because you have to make hard choices. And first you decide, you know, you want this list to be comprehensive and sort of representing the city and the community and the region. And you start sort of methodically sort of looking at, well, we need to represent this community, that community, and our certain style of dining. And then you have to make choices within those categories. Yeah. And one other detail is that no restaurant group can have more than one restaurant on this list. So you have some very excellent restaurant groups that are producing a number of restaurants that would be on anybody's list.
Yeah.
And we had to choose. And so those are hard. Those are really hard decisions and conversations, but they're based in real meals. And it's also based in the understanding that there are so many worthy places that are deserving of attention. We're going to do this every year. So the spotlight will shift and recognize many different places. And if a place was on last year but is not on this year, it doesn't mean they got worse.
Yeah.
Okay.
It just means that we expanded our view.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
To include more excellent restaurants.
That's a great clarification. Yeah. So we were trying to figure out how to start. Like,
well, I had an idea. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I guess the thing that I always come back to is, like, when people ask me, like, for a recommendation or a restaurant, usually my head just goes to some place that's really captivated my imagination right now. There's just, like, one place that kind of just pops to the top of my head. And I'm curious if there, for Margaret, if there's one place on this list that you just, like, can't stop thinking about. Or when people ask you, like, Margaret, like, what's the place that you just got to go to? This is the one that kind of tends to rise to the top for you, that you're super passionate about. Could be the food, could be the backstory, anything. Can you pick one for us to start off?
I mean, I have one that I've been advocating for since last year. Last year it was my Descent. I love Saloon Restaurant.
Yes.
Oh,
okay.
I love it so much.
Yeah.
Yes.
I know this spot. Tell us about it. Tell us about it. Yeah.
Saloon is just the kind of place where you can't not have a good time. You go in, it doesn't matter what you're celebrating or not celebrating. I went in on a Thursday with just one other person and they were like, hey, like, what are you here to commemorate? Is it an anniversary? I was like, no, like, it's Thursday. And they're like, great. it is just a whole vibe. It feels like it's almost like the thing that movie sets want to conjure when they're like, this is Philadelphia. It's just people rubbing elbows, you know, they're there to get the appetizers. They have like really good clams casino. They're there to get these,
it's
like
old school.
Yeah.
It's Bella Vista neighborhood, which is sort of South Philly-ish, mm-hmm. right? 7th mm-hmm. Street there. And what was interesting to me about Saloon as a selection, Margaret, is that it feels like you could pick it any year. Mm-hmm. So, like, why pick it now? Because it hasn't changed a lot and it's been around for a long time, right?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, part of it was it, like, so much of the calculating of what's going to be on the list is this kind of ineffable, where do you feel like the energy is in the scene right now?
Yes.
Like, where do you feel like people are really wanting to go out and, like, talking about, and, like, that's where the community wants to go eat? And it just felt like Saloon, this is its year. I mean, I think Saloon has had a lot of years throughout its history, but I think every time I went there, it was packed. It didn't matter.
It's like, amazing how packed it is.
The Saloon was the hot restaurant when I came to Philadelphia in the mid-90s.
No, it's seriously,
you know,
and
it was
rotten,
the place.
And it's still there.
But I would say the thing about the Saloon that I love, you know, and we have to look at restaurants sort of holistically. There's the food, and the food at the Saloon is good to very good, sometimes excellent, and good enough to certainly be considered for this list. It is a place.
Yeah.
It is a space. It is an old Philadelphia space with this, like, intricately wood, you know, carved dark wood panels.
So it's vibe, too.
All
good
this
vibe.
Sort of collected, like, 100-year-old signage from Philadelphia. And it's one of those Philadelphia places that I think we need more of.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, you can't fabricate them. We need to celebrate and preserve them.
Yeah.
A
great point.
And so what's the spot that sort of springs into your mind that you can't wait to tell
people? You're asking me
about
to choose.
It's so hard.
You know, I will say, you know, there's a lot of old favorites on this list that we talk about every year. I like to see, I like to look at some of the newer places that are sort of making a move. Two places come to mind. There's a pizza place, CJ&D's. We're looking a lot at the sort of evolution of the pizza culture in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And they're doing these Trenton-style pies inside of a brewery.
They don't really have a physical location. They're just inside a brewery like 3 days a week, right?
It captures a sort of pop-up energy, yes. collaboration energy that's going on. And it's just outstanding pizza. And I love to see the whole pizza culture continue to evolve. I also like to see the growth of certain communities. Like this year, we had a real bump in growth of Indonesian food.
I noticed
Indo that. Indo Spice is a new restaurant I wrote about earlier this year.
This is West Pasyunk, I believe.
This is West Pasyunk, and they are cooking cuisine from a particular region on Sulawesi, the island of Sulawesi called Makassar. And nobody, you know, we have a big Indonesian community, but nobody is cooking the red rice and the special mee-oop noodles, and the flavors just are popping, you know. And so it's part of the joy of this is showcasing places that reflect an emergence
yes.
of a community that's, you know, we've had an existing, you know, Indonesian community for a long time, but something's happening here. And there's all kinds of demographic and political reasons for why this community is suddenly growing again. And we're seeing food, it was an Indonesian food truck, Sego, that I sort of helped direct some people to who are on our beat for food, and that, you know, there you can get a beef rendang hoagie now
on the street.
Right on 15th Street.
That's amazing.
That's so cool.
So, you know, those are the fun things. I love watching, you know, our Mexican community continues to evolve, and I'm so thrilled at all levels. You know, we have a number of really exciting Mexican places that have just continued to sort of excite me.
By the way, the very first restaurant on your list, and I know it's in alphabetical order, so it's not like ranked or anything like that, but Al Baik Shawarma.
Oh, yeah. Northeast Philly, right?
Yeah. Palestinian food. The description, juicy cuts of chicken, beef, lamb, well-seasoned. What's the story here, Margaret? I mean, this one, and Craig, you talked about being in the news in different communities. And we know the Palestinian community has been in the news quite often. And so tell me about this food and why this made the list. And I've never had Palestinian food, but everything that was described was something I would want to eat.
Yeah, it sounded good.
It sounded really good.
This is really thanks to one of our incredible reporters, Hira Qureshi. And this was her beat, is that she really wanted to look at the Middle Eastern and Levantine food in the region. And she did an incredible job. I think she hit up a lot of places, made an incredibly comprehensive list, and went place by place to kind of determine not just Middle Eastern as a broader category, but being like, okay, what's Palestinian food? What's Yemeni food? What here is different and what should you be looking for when you're getting this kind of food? And I mean, the thing that Hira also found, I will say, when I was editing this, is that we are in a place of incredible falafels.
Yes.
Like, that stood out to me. Yes. Like the crispy, the way it was described. Yes.
Look for a follow up about that, because I just was like little falafel balls dreaming.
And frankly, like his mouth started watering a little bit.
I'm a big falafel fan. And I just wanted to say, you know, I mentioned to you that there were like 18 people out in the scouting. And there are a number, a handful of restaurants on this list that I don't even know that I haven't been to. And Al Baik is one of those.
Yeah. So even you're discovering through this totally. List, which is amazing.
That's remarkable. And it's so wonderful. Yeah. And it just speaks to how deep and vast our dining scene is.
Wow. I got to read some of our audience suggestions just to start getting these here.
Yes.
We have Leather on YouTube says South Street Souvlaki. There's love in it. Lisa on YouTube says Comfort and Floyd, which is in South Philly near my house. Best breakfast brunch anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big fan, so I'll second that one. Yogi from Hamilton, New Jersey. This is, I got to know, I got to try this at some point. A place called Deer Path, Bagels and Burgers at 691 US 130 in Hamilton.
Okay.
And Liam from South Jersey says, if you're looking for the best hoagie you will ever have in your life, head over to Amato Brothers in Oakland, New Jersey. All their sandwiches are good, but their spicy Italian hoagie is my personal favorite.
That sounds delicious.
Let's bring on a caller now. This is Alicia in South Philly on line two. Hey, Alicia, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi. So my question is, what stood out to you most in creating this list that was different from last year? Like, do you see any trends come to light? Did you see any neighborhoods that really had more buzz, or were there neighborhoods where that they were hot maybe last year in the past years and kind of fell off? So I'm just curious what your takeaways were.
Okay, yeah, like sort of trend line takeaways,
good
Margaret.
Question.
Is it a neighborhood that comes to mind? Is it a type of cuisine that comes to mind?
I think the things that came to mind are picking up a little bit on what Craig was saying, the boom in Indonesian food.
Yes.
And also all these restaurants on the 7th Street near Snyder Corridor. There's a bunch of
this is sort of deeper South Philly.
Deeper South Philly. New Mexican restaurants. There's always a huge Mexican presence here in Philly, but Tequilas, La Jefa, there's like all these very exciting new places. We also had some new Thai food, and like we love Kalea. Like,
yeah,
it's
of course,
celebrated
on the list. All over the world.
Absolutely. Our reporter Kiki Araneta did some deep dives in some newer Thai food places in, and she had a couple on the list: Dara, Silly Chicken and Rice. She also really loved Chong Tong, which is on the Descents. And I've gone after she filed these blurbs. One of it, it's a hazard of the job that whenever someone files something, I'm like, oh no, now I really need to go get Thai food.
But it's, you know, you talk about neighborhoods, and sometimes there's these little micro neighborhoods. So the Thai restaurant Mini Boom is really, I can't explain it, but on the 1300 block of Walnut Street, where you have Dara, is a really fun place. You also have Grandma's Philly, and you have another restaurant across the street that's also Thai. And it's hard to explain why certain neighborhoods, they're not residential neighborhoods, they're sort of just downtown business places where people end up clustering together. But that's one of the fun mysteries of this job.
But I'll say, Craig, one of the things are South Philly, where, you know, that's why he's
there.
The foodie, because it's so many restaurants are in that South Philly, Past Yonk type of area. I mean, it's just great dining down there. That neighborhood is still popping.
Yeah, well, you know, once again, you have a confluence of multiple communities. You know, the old Italian traditions down there, but you have an incredible Southeast Asian community, including Cambodian, which is really surging because you have Mon leading the way with national acclaim for what they're doing. But we also have Sophie's Kitchen at 6th and Washington on the list, where they're doing very traditional Cambodian food. And the Southeast Asian market and FDR Park is represented, which has become really blossomed into one of the great, I think, tourist destinations and local destinations Philadelphia has, period, during the warm weather months. So, and then you have, of course, the whole Mexican community that's grown up down there. There's a little sort of hidden gem on West Passyunk that I reviewed last year that's also on this list called El Mictlan, which is fantastic on Snyder Avenue. And he's from the region of Guerrero near Acapulco, which is a different community from the largely, you know, Puebla-based Mexican community of South Philadelphia. So, you know, he's adding to this patchwork of all these regional, as we get to know all these communities better, we learn the regional specifics of where these people come from, and they celebrate these things, and there's a great reception in our we have very sophisticated diners who seek out these things and appreciate them.
By the way, Marty Moscowane, longtime WHYY host,
listening
and recommends Charcoal in Yardley, where she has apparently been and dined with Craig Levan.
Oh, wow.
That was
lucky Marty.
I'm glad to hear Charcoal is still doing a great job. That's such a fun place. I think they've been around for almost 50 years. It's a family restaurant right on the Delaware River.
I wanted to ask, but now they're on the suburbs. Yeah, this comment from Debbie.
Debbie says, there aren't many mainline restaurants on the list. Why do you think the mainline food scene isn't as vibrant? And do you think it's growing?
That's true. There wasn't a ton on the mainline.
There was like one or two.
I remember there was a pizza joint that made it.
Oh, exceptional. This is Johnny's.
Yeah.
Johnny's, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because we were all obsessed with this with this pizza joint. So I was like, what are you talking about? It's Johnny's. Johnny's is on the mainline. Not only does this pizza joint, it is like apparently like cheesesteak lover's paradise. And now we're like always have our radar out, right?
For
underground cheesesteaks, you know what I mean? Like this is the reality of the job and of food in Philadelphia. Are like, I heard a guy is making a new cheesesteak. We gotta find him, you know? Mm-hmm. And this is one that was so impressive to like the real cheesesteak heads in our
And the pizza's great too. Yeah. I mean I went there and ate both, and I thought they were both exceptional.
Let's bring in another caller now. Yeah. This is Anne from Roxborough, mm-hmm. who I think wants to make a recommendation for us. Anne, you're on Studio 2. What do you got?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I do apologize. I'm in the car, but I refuse to miss this opportunity, so thank you.
Okay.
I'm going to recommend the Pierogi Kitchen.
Okay.
Polish pierogies and Polish comfort food has been in the Roxborough area for over 15 years. Small, quaint little place, take out, eat on the patio, woman-owned, female-owned, and just now growing out of its skin and moving to Ambler.
Oh,
so
nice.
More to come.
So speaking of the burbs.
Good for Ambler, bad for Roxborough.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the Pierogi Kitchen. They got a lovely little website. Did that ever come across your radar, Craig?
We did, there's a lot of energy in the Polish restaurant spaces. Well, we featured a place called Little Walters.
Yeah.
Which is sort of a next generation sort of reimagination of traditional Polish food using live fire. That's in Kensington, which continues to be a growth neighborhood. It's very exciting. Somebody was on the Polish beat and ate at four or five or six mm-hmm. of these restaurants. So we talk about the main line. We ate on the main line. Yeah. And some of those restaurants there's a lot of restaurants, but we're looking for, excellence, things that really resonate. And it remains one of the big riddles of our dining scene as to why I wish, can somebody please open a really outstanding, amazing, special restaurant on the main line? I'll come mm-hmm. eat there.
It seems like that would be a great location where people would come.
I did notice that Ambler popped up on this list, though, mm-hmm. and it did make me wonder, there was a Peruvian place in Ambler. Geronimo's.
Yeah.
And I guess I was wondering if there is a spot in the suburbs where there seems to be like a collection of interesting stuff happening, Margaret, most of the restaurants on this list are in Philly, I think, a majority. Mm-hmm. It does seem like there's some really isolated, interesting things happening in different suburbs. I don't know if there's anywhere where it's clustering right now.
I think Westchester.
Well, we have Andiario's on the list, and that's one of my all-time favorite. You would call it Italian in style, but it's really a Pennsylvania ingredient farm-to-table mm-hmm. restaurant using live fire. I would say Collingswood, New Jersey mm-hmm. remains sort of a powerhouse. There's a number of places on this list. June BYOB, which is a classic French restaurant. It's still wonderful. It's like our lineage to the old Le Bec Fen. But also, I wrote about a new Turkish place in Collingswood called Oba Grill.
This was on my list to ask about because it's owned by, and this is, I believe I got this as a direct quote, a Turkish bodybuilder turned construction mogul.
Bodyguard.
Bodyguard versus
unless it was a typo.
What is the backstory there?
Okay, I don't have the story in front of me, so that the owner's name is eluding me. But his story is he was a bodyguard for the Turkish Secret Service, and he was working. at the American Embassy in Istanbul when I think George Bush Senior and Barbara came to visit through, and then 2 years later he was able to sort of move to the Philadelphia region and start a life here. And he has become a builder, a very active like home builder. He builds mosques in the area, and as the case, people want to sort of recreate the flavors of a home, and they have the means to do it. And he created a really Oba Grills in an old renovated Victorian home on the outskirts of Collingswood. Very traditional Turkish food, but you walk in and there's an oven and they're producing these pitas that are puffing like balloons and wonderful flatbreads topped with like spiced lamb and all kinds of grilled things.
You're speaking
and
my medze, language.
Really delicious, and there's a beautiful porch to eat outside. So I really love that place, but Collingswood is really vibrant.
That's right. I mean, Lieberroot is there too.
Oh, Lieberroot.
And my one from last year that didn't make it this year, but I love is Zeppeli.
Oh, Zeppeli, so good.
Oh, so good.
So Collingswood's kind of popping off.
Yeah, it's popping.
Oh,
all right.
But Ambler also.
Ambler's a good one too. Yeah. Good.
Maybe we should bring in another caller. This caller is Phyllis from Delaware. I'll mention that you guys don't really dine down in Delaware, but we'll bring Phyllis on. Phyllis, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, my question, and I do come to Philly periodically. We moved to Delaware from the area.
Okay.
So my question is, I know this is a niche market, but there are many more of us out there than you may realize, and I'm wondering if you guys have investigated restaurants that do a good job with gluten-free dining, safe and good cuisine.
Oh, okay.
I think we're going to be able to help you here, Phyllis. Yes. Because I think Craig's eyes lit up a little bit.
Yeah, you're talking to the right man.
So, Phyllis, my daughter is celiac. So we have sort of, and this is a sort of recent discovery for our family a few years ago. And, you know, that really will shape how you choose restaurants that you go to. It's really a difficult restriction to deal with when you say you can't have gluten anymore. Yeah. And you have to because things like gluten-free, there's a fad level. There's people who like to eat gluten-free because they think it's healthy for them. And there are people who really just can't eat gluten-free.
Yeah.
So there's different levels of care that need to be taken in a kitchen that's going to be serving people who really have like celiac disease. So a year ago, I did what I consider to be the sort of definitive, deepest guide into gluten-free dining in the Philadelphia region. There were over 76 restaurants and bakeries that I featured. If you email me at cleban@inquirer.com, I will send you a link to that list. However, things change so rapidly.
So fast, yeah.
That's something that I'm in the midst of updating. But I do include a comment at the bottom of all my restaurant reviews as to how they accommodate gluten-free diners.
Yeah, wow. That's great.
By the way, I want to reintroduce our guests. We have Margaret Eby, food editor for the Philadelphia Inquirer. We also have Craig LeBan, longtime food critic at The Inky with us. And our question of the day for you, our listeners, of course, is what restaurants do you think should make the big list? You can call us. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, keep those comments coming in the chat.
I love a good backstory.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, I feel like I'm reading this list as much for the backstories as the food. And here's one that caught my eye, Margaret. It's a place in Northeast Philly called Ginger. I think I'm saying that right. It seemed like from the description, there's a merger of like Soviet diaspora flavors. It's kind of a fine dining feel. And I think it mentioned that the chef or one of the people involved is a 21-year-old prodigy. Okay, I'm listening now. 21? Do I have that right? Craig, so should I be tracking this guy?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. I wrote a full review of this restaurant last year. It's called Ginger. Mm-hmm. And the chef's name is Timir Satibaldiev.
Yeah.
And he's from Kyrgyzstan.
Okay.
Grew up in Kyrgyzstan, but knew at a young age that he wanted to cook. So he went back and forth to Moscow from the age he was, I think, 14, and was cooking in very high-level restaurants, Michelin star restaurants.
He's like a teenager.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh my God.
So young. And he came over here. He migrated. You know, we have a very large population of people who came from I refer to it as the post-Soviet diaspora, but you know, Russia, you have Ukraine, you also have Georgia and Uzbekistan. And lately, I've seen a real boost in Kyrgyzstanis up in Northeast Philly. So Ginger, he and his brothers were here, and they went in on, he has another restaurant called Vanilla, but Ginger is a very, you walk in, it's a strip mall, but it's a very modern space, very colorful, and he's doing a combination of what you would say sort of traditional Central Asian things like manti dumplings and skewers, but then he's doing very, what I would consider contemporary dining, interpretive things like braised bull's cheeks with these potatoes that are, black. But they're tinted black, and he's trying to tell a story about when he was a child, you know, eating potatoes out of the fire, you know, by the river after swimming back in Kyrgyzstan. So he's very talented, and the food is fascinating.
Sounds so precocious. Like, oh, my goodness. I want to meet him.
Yeah.
But people, I would say, you know, people are more vocationally oriented in Europe. They know, they often will say, like, I'm not going to go to college. I'm going to go to, you know, cooking school or learn to be a chef. And he knew very early on. And ironically, he wanted to move to Philadelphia when the conflict broke out between Ukraine and Russia, and the Michelin guy decided they were no longer going to give Michelin stars to Russia.
Oh.
He says, well, I want to be the youngest person to ever have a Michelin star, so I'm going to move to Philadelphia. Wow. And I was like, we don't have Michelin stars here, but this guy knew something.
Because they came. Coming. Now they are, and we talked about that.
Amazing.
By the way,
I saw the future. I don't know.
He knew. I got to talk about this restaurant because I love Caribbean food. Mm. And you have a Haitian restaurant on the list called Goo. Is it called?
Goo.
And Olney. I was like, wow, that's a neighborhood that you very rarely hear on the list. But the food, I mean, it's Haitian. That the word Goo, Haitian Creole word for tasty. They have all sorts of things that I love. Peppery red sauce with whole fried snapper, chicken, goat, all those things. Can you tell me a little bit about goat?
I mean, I love goat. I love Caribbean food because for years I lived in Crown Heights in Brooklyn, and I just was like completely spoiled by being able to like go around the corner and get Trinidadian doubles and like shark and bake.
Sounds good.
I was just like, yes. Earl Hopkins is the incredible reporter who ate through all different Caribbean restaurants. And he was like, this is the one. And I was like,
wow.
Yes, I know. So.
And Haitian food is something rare. And it has that the French Haitian cuisine here. I'm just like, I really want to go there.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we have a sizable Haitian community, and they are centered around Olney. There are fewer restaurants, though, that are reflecting their cuisine yet, so that's really exciting to have Goo pop up. That's one of the restaurants on the list that I've still yet to get to, and I'm very excited to.
I love it. Another place that I think you reviewed, Margaret, and it gets to this, one of the big challenges of this list is how do you pick the star in like a restaurant group that people know really well. So, for instance, I think you did you picked the Vetri one. I guess there was going to be a Mark Vetri restaurant on this list. And how did you land at the one that you guys landed on? And what are those conversations like picking the one Steven Starr, the one Michael Solomonoff, the one Mark Vetri on the list?
Yeah, I mean, it's contentious. I mean, for Vetri, you know, I had actually never eaten at Vetri before I went to Scout this year. And I was like, I've eaten so much pasta. Like, all right. I admit, I went and I was like, all right, show me what you got. And I was like, oh, okay. All right. Like,
this is good.
It is so good. Yeah. I mean, that place is really special. Not only is the pasta incredible, the food is really, really good. But to have a restaurant that has that consistent warmth of service and feels like it's still innovating after being in business all those years.
That's hard to do.
It's really hard. And I think it's the kind of place where I had actually, when I was scouting, I brought one of my good friends, and it was sort of our like fun like friend's date night, and it was like I would feel happy with any kind of, you know, if my parents were in town, if it was a special occasion. It's pricey, like I'm not saying I'm gonna go eat there like twice a week, but it feels so worth it. It feels like such a place that you go for an occasion, and your expectations are really fulfilled. And so that really hit the mark for me. A long time patron of Fiorella, like I'm constantly at Fiorella, like,
which is the location down in South Philly.
Yeah,
but this, you went with the Center City classic, the Vetri Cucina, is it called?
Yes. Yeah. Even though I did go to Fiorella and order, I think, everything on the menu.
It wasn't bad.
I'm not mad. I'm not going to kick that one out of bed. But
I have to say, we're getting close to wrapping up, but I have to say there were so many international restaurants with international food, not as many American restaurants. And so I just want to ask you both, sort of, how have you seen the palate of Philadelphians change, our region change? Yeah. Because I mean, are we more adventurous now? Do we have higher standards? We don't just want some regular burger. We want like real thing. Like, how have you seen things change, Craig?
Well, I think it depends how you define American food. And, you know, here we are in Philadelphia. You know, our whole cuisine has been, you know, evolving for over hundreds of years of immigration. What are we, you know, pizza's American food now.
Yeah.
But it began as an Italian food, you know, and I think all of us who are fortunate enough to live in a city like Philadelphia can wake up and say, I feel like Vala today, or, you know, maybe I want some tacos or some birria. And that's how I wake up. I don't even draw the lines so much in genres. I think what happens is you have a certain class of restaurants these days you would have, say, for example, a gastropub or like, you know, a bar that's sort of elaborating on burgers or whatnot. But, you know, the modern American restaurant, we call them now, these sort of high-end places that can draw from many cultures and many styles, are sort of redefining who we are through what we eat. And a lot of those things, you can no longer draw an easy line around what's American and what's not.
Well, thank you so much, Craig LeBan, food critic at The Enquirer, for your insights today and for your contributions to this list, the 76. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
And equal appreciation to you, Margaret Evi, food editor for the Philadelphia Inquirer. It's a Herculean task putting all this together, and we benefit from it. So thank you.
18 scouts.
Oh, it was so fun to be here.
Yes. And by the way, it is now time to reveal our Studio 2 DJ of the Day song selection. Hit it, Al.
Have a banana, Anna. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it to Gravy Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house.
All right, so that is Everybody Eats When They Come to My House by Cab Calloway from 1947. By the way, Cab's father is a graduate of an HBCU, Lincoln University in Chester County. So that links back to something we talked about earlier today.
Yes.
So great selection. Gita from Abington, thanks for being our DJ of the day. And Gita adds, we need more good restaurants in Abington. So maybe next year on the list, Gita.
Gita is stumping for Abington. Love that. Thank you so much to our producers, Debbie Builder and Andreas Copes. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calique engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gray.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We will talk to you next week.